This recording is brought to you by ListenUpNorth.com, a podcast featuring the North Penn writers' work recorded here in the Community Centre in Stanhope in the heart of Weardale, County Durham, nestling in the beautiful North Pennines.
Threads of Gold and Sorrow, a short story written and read by Carol Lister. Rosa carefully lifted the small silk-clad bundle out of her basket, said a little prayer and gently placed it in the lagoon. She felt so much pain and sorrow. How could she have come to this? Her once happy, innocent life, where she was becoming known as a talented dressmaker, had turned into a nightmare. A few months ago, Rosa had been chosen to make a wedding dress for Sophia, a beautiful girl of noble birth. When she was young, her mother had worked at the Sacred Heart Convent on the island of Burano, and the nuns had taken Rosa under their wing and taught her how to sew. They had recognised her talent and nurtured it, with the result that she made exquisite vestments. One of the nuns had recommended her to the young bride-to-be, who was to be married in the beautiful Byzantine church on Torcello, the smallest island in the Venetian lagoon. The dress was of a simple design, long and flowing, with a high neck and long, narrow sleeves. The heavy cream silk was shot through with gold threads and decorated with gold glass beads fashioned by a glassmaker in Murano. There were dainty gold slippers and a small circlet of lustrous pearls for the bride's head. Rosa had done the final fitting before the wedding a few days ago, and her final task had been to be at the church on Torcello to carry out any final adjustments before the ceremony. She had felt so relieved that it was nearly over for her, because she was hiding a terrible secret. It was so hard for her to think back to what had happened. The prospective bridegroom, a wealthy and very powerful Venetian, had waylaid her when she was on her way to see his bride. He had said he wished to discuss his wedding clothes, and while she was at his palazzo, he had plied her with wine and seduced her, knowing full well that she would never tell anyone. Her family were poor fishermen from Burano, who depended on the money she earned. When she discovered she was pregnant, she had been frantic and lived in fear that it would be noticed. However, she had concealed her condition by wearing fuller clothes and a long cape. The wedding day had dawned bright and clear, and the Venetian lagoon, bathed in a golden light, looked her best. Rosa arrived early and made her way to the church. It was decorated with beautiful white lilies, their sweet fragrance filling the tiny church. She had felt some twinges of severe pain and prayed that the baby would not be born this day. She had concealed herself in the church to avoid the bridegroom, who arrived resplendent in red velvet trimmed in fur. When the bride arrived, Rosa had hurried to make any final adjustments to the dress. She had made a long stole of the silk material to place around the bride's shoulders, but saw that it was not needed. She had packed it away in her basket to use in the future. She could feel throughout the day that the pains had become stronger and closer together, and knew that she needed somewhere to hide, but with the island being so tiny, she could easily have been discovered. Her only chance had been to climb up the steps to the ancient church tower. By the time the wedding was over, she had delivered herself a tiny baby girl who was very weak. She had wrapped the baby in the silk stole left over from the wedding dress and prayed for a miracle, but an hour later, the tiny heart had stopped beating. The silk stole had become a shroud for her baby. When she was sure all the guests had gone, she had carried the baby down the steps to the lagoon. Now she watched the tiny silk-clad bundle disappear under the water, then picked up her basket and slowly walked away.
Patchwork, a poem written and read by Katie Wallace. The fabric of my life enfolds around me, a patchwork quilt forged from laughter, joy and tears. each square a memory, a hope, a dream, held together by a woven seam, some tattered, frayed, faded or torn, repaired by time and its healing dawn. The muted hues of teenage dreams, muslin worn under a blue Greek sky, soft cheesecloth scraps of hippie days, the floral Laura Ashley years. Soft, sensuous silks for summer love, ribboned, bejewelled, unfettered and free, floating in sunshine, drifting through time, embroidered, embellished, a life in its prime. No more the carefree days of youth, family needs, the washable years, office suits and corporate looks, buttoned and zipped and done up with hooks. Roles of my life defined in the cloth, more than a daughter, a mother, a wife, reflections of struggles, of work and of play, all of my life is patchwork in there. Rough fabric stitched onto satin and silk, timeless seams of red and gold, colours of joy and shades of despair, all of my life is contained in there.
Birthday Bingo, written and read by Sarah Hudspeth. It snowed the day that you were born, the same words every year. I wait for them, like a game of birthday bingo. Grand National Day, you know. We should have named you after a horse. Not Red Rum, not that year. You were tiny, like a bag of sugar. Flaky, skinned rabbit, loud, red. I didn't know what to do with you when I got you home. House, I win.
Completing a Sampler, written by Jan Hewitt and read by Chris Powell. Two syllables. Siskins, that's all. A word Middle Dutch by way of German, Russian, Czech. Northern Europe in my backyard. And their call, companionable at dusk. See you, see me. A counterpointed rise and fall while I stitch, listening to the whir of wings on the feeder, while small beaks separate hearts from the husk. Since you went back to Denmark, I completed Kingfisher, Waxwing and Siskins, working from your translations. Lizigul, Gulgron, for that quick gold flash in the dark. And now, calling, Siskins skitter across the rooftops, head back to the lonely dean, roost in the pines.
Taking a Break, a short story written and read by Avril Grundy. As a small child, I was inspired by travel, a long drive through the mountains in Denbighshire, Wales. We stopped at the top of the Horseshoe Pass. We welcomed the break to stretch our legs. In the 50s, roadside cafes were few and far between. We always carried our primer stove with us so we could always have a cup of tea in the most spectacular of places. As we sat on the edge of the road looking down the valley through the afternoon haze, I looked in wonder at the landscape. I still enjoy the spectacular views I can see in the distance, remote and quiet areas of the countryside. I hope one day to achieve a 360 panoramic view when I will be on top of the world. That's what I have been looking for the last 55 years. Success has eluded me. I can only hope one day to realise my dream.
Advert for a Clean Slate, a poem written and read by Susan Nicholson. Bethel, Soar and Bethesda. Soft, slate steps, scrubbed weekly, smoothed and renewed by the cleaner's hands. Souls scoured and cleansed by the mechanics of fear. All weaknesses can be forensically examined through the senses of the elders and the ministers. The congregation sweeps up anything missed. Lives may be split like the quarryman's layering of slate, and fracturing judgments can render the soul to a sharp splint. Tap, 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 and any resistance cracks. And so, your slate will be wiped clean and your conscience cleared each Sunday morning in Bethel, Soar, and Bethesda. Any takers?
Cold, Hard, Coloured, a short story written and read by Jeremy Waugh. Petra Lavotska, are you up the apple tree? I know he knows. It used to be his game. Petra Lavotska, are you in the cellar? Now, it's Petra Lavotska, where the hell are you? I'm standing here with your lunch, and my backside is bloody freezing. Are you out there again? Now it's serious. Today, this week, this term, big school now. Not playing now. Pulled, get up, light the stove, get your own breakfast now. If you've done the washing, you'll have a clean skirt. But lunch still made by him. I know why. I know why he's still bothered with me. I think what to do. Keep my breath low, even though it's like icy water in my mouth. Make no sound, even though the cold hurts. He'll not come out and look. He'll not want to step out of the porch when he's cold. But if I move, the chickens will scatter. How long for him to decide I'm not out here? I've actually gone. Lunch doesn't bother me. We'll have to listen for him stepping away. Annoyed sound of him turning back and through the porch, across the kitchen and away through the house. I know the sounds of everywhere inside when he steps angrily. So many times I've waited to be sure that he's gone and I can breathe again, properly. Petra Lavotska, I'm going. You can get yourself to school, but you'll go without this lunch. I still hold my breathing. He could trick me, pretend he's gone when he knows I'm still here. Don't want catching. The pain's worse when the skin's all cold and hard. Worse with the frost. So, little breaths. Concentrate. Keep looking at Grandad's woven tester that's in here, hanging from a peg in the rough shelf below the window. Petra, little one, that's the smallest piece I've made. It's for you. The littlest thing my two hands can hold and weave on a loom. It has a shine of frozen dewdrops all over it. A few just beginning to run off and starting a pool on the floor below. Petra Lavotska, I'm going into town. I've a tractor part to collect and some crap turnips to try and sell. There's goulash for your tea. Why always goulash? It's not the only thing she taught him to cook. I'll be eating your lunch and I'll lock the doors. Go to school or stay in the shed and freeze your arse. My arse is numb already. Always is. He makes the porch creak as he turns. Then he slaps and bangs through the kitchen door. I hear the lock, then his steps inside, muffled behind the door. Not sure he's really going, till I hear the car start on the second try. Wheels squeak. Then the door and the gate. And then he's back in and driving away. Breathe properly, and move again. Get out. Can't stay inside. Too cramped and cold. I won't go to school. I pick up Grandad's cloth, and it's as cold as my hand. Push my stiff fingers around it, sure not to drop it when I walk. Disturbing the chickens doesn't matter now. Through the fruit trees, over the back fence, I edge our field but straight across the neighbours. They planted nothing for winter. They'll live on stored autumn potatoes and beets and salted goat. My face and hands crack with the cold and remembering the smell of their meat and the work of planting our greens. I can see the river, Grandad's fishing hut. The padlock still shining and only ever me that he told, so it's only him and me that knew it was never locked, just looked it. Inside, it's even colder than out. The fishing gear has hung not used and it's now permanently stiff. His hanks of thread are hanging from a line of string below the shelf that's rough and a bit rotten, same as the shelf in the shed. They're all misted like in the shed, but the colours are still clear as ever. I peg the tester piece I'm holding beside these. It's the same size as my hand. The frame of the loom and all its parts squeak and creak, same as always as I swing the treadle. After a while I get it all running. I don't stop looking at the piece he gave me while I pass the shuttle across and back. The colours are all those that have been on the loom ever since. Everything drags with the cold, but it's slowly getting easier, more in a rhythm. I'll never make actual fabric, he didn't manage to teach me to do that. Just how to work the loom and pass across and back. Doesn't matter. I just watched the threads gathering and twisting and combining behind my hand. That's as much as Grandad had time to teach me about weaving, that my hands can make a soft hold, can pull and twist gently, that hands, everyone's hands, can be careful and beautiful.
This podcast was produced by listenupnorth.com, featuring the work of the North Penns Writers Group, Stanup, in County Durham, and was sponsored by Weardale Area Action Partnership.